Welcome to the Nail Your Nutrition podcast, a podcast focused on training for endurance activity. I'm Sarah, a registered dietitian and toddler mom in the Washington, D.C. area. I write the blog Bucket List Tummy and focus most of my work on running and endurance athletes, as well as merging the principles of sports nutrition with the principles of intuitive eating.
And I'm Marita, a sports dietitian and fellow toddler mom in Pensacola, Florida. I work with endurance athletes at my private practice, Eat to Compete. My goal is to help athletes learn to fuel their training with intuitive eating. We are two sports dietitians and moms here to break down the nutrition science to make training more fun and approachable for you. Whether you're a novice athlete, a weekend warrior, a mom trying to fit in a consistent exercise schedule, or a top finisher at big races, we want to help you understand the importance of fueling well. We're so glad to have you here and would appreciate you spreading the word or sharing this episode or podcast with a friend, family member, training partner, coworker, or anyone you would think would enjoy it. If you have a minute, please leave us a review wherever you subscribe to your podcast, as that really helps the show. Now let's get to today's episode.
Hi everyone. Today we have Rachel Manor on the podcast. Rachel is the Director of Olympic Sports Nutrition at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. She holds a bachelor's degree in life science from the University of Portland in Portland, Oregon, where she was also a varsity athlete on the women's basketball team. After college, she completed a didactic program of dietetics at Middle Tennessee State University and then completed her dietetic internship and a master's of science in exercise science and nutrition at Lipscomb University in Nashville, Tennessee. Rachel served as the sports dietitian at the University of Oregon for nearly 2 years and has since been at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill for over 8 years. Rachel has supported national championship teams and has spearheaded weight-inclusive nutrition and intuitive eating education, all while working towards removing diet culture from sport culture and optimizing performance. Rachel is credentialed as a registered dietitian, a certified intuitive eating counselor, and a certified specialist in sports dietetics. She has a lot of acronyms behind her name, but Rachel is very well-versed in all things diet culture and intuitive eating. I think it's so cool that she's a certified intuitive eating counselor and a CSSD. I'm so excited to bring you this conversation about diet culture in sport, particularly college athletics. So let's get right to it. Welcome to the podcast, everyone. Today, we are super excited to have Rachel Manor on the podcast. She is the sports dietitian at UNC down in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. So, Rachel, we would love if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do and how it is you came to do what you do.
Sure. Happy to share a bit about that. So I'm a sports dietitian at UNC Chapel Hill, like you mentioned. I'm also proud of my certification in intuitive eating as well that I got a few years ago. And I'm the director of Olympic sports nutrition. So here at UNC, I'm really passionate about the weight inclusive approach to health for all bodies, including athletes. I do a lot of individual counseling and screening and team sessions and hydration checks. And I provide a lot of anti-diet nutrition messaging all over the place. And I didn't always do that. I found intuitive eating later in my career. I didn't find intuitive eating until I got to UNC. So I didn't learn about health at every size and intuitive eating in my formal dietetics education. So really fortunate that my supervisors here at UNC have given me the time and space and the funds to learn more about intuitive eating. I first learned about it from our campus health dietitian. So part of my responsibilities here is to be on our eating disorder treatment team in campus health. And learning from our campus health dietitian at the time when I started, and we have a couple of fabulous campus health dietitians now that I learn a lot from. So I first learned about it there, and it's been sort of a long time coming. It wasn't until like 2015, 16 that I read the intuitive eating book in its entirety. I started listening to the Food Psych podcast in 2017. That was a big game changer for me. And then the intuitive eating certificate in 2018 that I thought really, really built my confidence and helped me be more vocal with our athletes and staff. There's still so much to learn about intuitive eating and health at every size. And so definitely continuing to learn about the nuance and the spirit of intuitive eating.
Did you take the intuitive eating certificate through the actual authors, like Elise and I can't remember her other name.
And Evelyn.
Yeah. Evelyn. There we go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I did their certification. So I did the exam and the quiz and the teleseminar series with Evelyn. And then that was my first experience with supervision with Evelyn also. And I've been doing more peer supervision and more formal supervision ever since. That's been really helpful. Certainly can't do this work on our own, right?
Yeah. Where do you do your supervision at? That's so interesting.
Yeah. So I've got a peer group of sports dietitians that we meet once a month that Jenny Zabinski organized. And then I also do more formal supervision with Leslie Schilling.
And does she do sports stuff too?
Both of them do. Both Jenny and Leslie.
So Rachel, I think that's super interesting that you're actually linking up with the campus health dietitian. Is that standard for sports, like college sports nutrition departments?
It is not standard, actually. I worked at the University of Oregon prior to coming to UNC, and the setup was sports dietitians were employees of like the athletics department. But UNC is a unique healthcare model where all of sports medicine is under campus health. So the athletic trainers, the physicians, the physical therapists, and the sports dietitians are all under the campus health umbrella. So it is very unique in that I also will see general students as well. So any UNC student that wants to have more of a sports nutrition specific appointment, they can request to see a sports dietitian. So that's been fun to have that variety and meet different people. Most of my time is spent with varsity athletes, but it is fun to meet some club sport athletes or intramural sport athletes.
Yeah, totally. And would you say it's a little bit more interdisciplinary that way too, since there is like a, you said there was some eating disorder training, right? Or the eating disorder dietitian that you worked with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm on the treatment team for the general population with our campus health dietitians, physicians, NPs, and that meets once a week, every Tuesday. And then we also have a treatment team for our athlete population, and that meets once a month with our sports psychologists, sports med physicians, and sports dietitians. So yeah, we definitely value that multidisciplinary approach here at UNC. And I think being under the campus health umbrella really helps with that.
And it sounds like it's a very proactive culture, I would say, to avoid any kind of eating disorders and issues from the get-go.
Definitely. That is something I'm really passionate about, is the prevention of disordered eating, eating disorders, red S. I think that's really important. And I'm fortunate to be in a position where that can and should be a focus.
Right. And that kind of leads us into our next question is, can you tell us a little bit about the culture in college sports? And it may be different at UNC. I know you guys are making big strides, but in terms of weight, performance, eating habits, how would you kind of explain what maybe the blanket culture looks like in college sports?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like you said, we're trying really hard at Carolina to challenge diet culture and create a more inclusive, more compassionate culture here with our athletes. But I think, unfortunately, generally speaking in sports, you guys have probably seen this, but you know, that hyper focus on body size and body composition, the monitoring of it with regularity. And in my experience, I've just seen this leads athletes to believe that they can and should be eating in a way to manipulate their body size, and perpetuating that myth that athletes need to be cut and lean and all look the same in order to perform well. If I had a dollar for every time an athlete said, if I just lost 5 pounds, I'd be a better athlete. I'd be a millionaire and I'd still have this job, because there's just so much work to do to help athletes like unlearn those messages that are really prevalent in sports. These messages are really dangerous. I think red S, disordered eating, eating disorders are on the rise. And I think we need to take a hard look at all of sport culture and the messages that are spoken and unspoken about food and weight and bodies. There's a famous quote by Desmond Tutu that I really like that I read in Christy Harrison's anti-diet book. And it's, there comes a point where we need to stop just pulling people out of the river. We need to go upstream and find out why they're falling in the first place. So, in my opinion, I think this focus on weight and body composition in sport is a factor in that. And I think a huge barrier for athletes in fueling for performance. And so that's why we're trying to shift that in sport culture.
Yeah, and it sounds like you are taking a really big approach at UNC to do that. Is that one of the reasons why you decided to move there instead of Oregon?
Sure. So yeah, so my experience at the University of Oregon as a sports dietitian, it was definitely more food service focused. It was a lot of fun with sort of managing the fueling stations, organizing team meals, you know, pregame, postgame meals and snacks. But I wanted to do more with my career. I wanted to be a little bit more challenged intellectually. And yeah, at UNC, there's that focus on professional growth and development and a multidisciplinary approach clinically. And so I think that's definitely what drew me to UNC and it's what's kept me here for almost 8 years. So yeah, I appreciate that focus.
Yeah, I mean, when you think college sports dietitian, I automatically think like a little bit of food service and setting up stations. So do you still do that at UNC or is it more counseling and being more proactive to avoid Red S and eating disorders?
Mm-hmm. I would say I'm definitely more focused on counseling and education and prevention of disordered eating disorders and promoting fueling for performance. But I think I've been really fortunate that our director of sports medicine and our head athletic trainer have been really supportive in me sort of forming this role to the way that I've made it today. And then I will also say when I first started at UNC, we didn't have a fueling station actually. And so the sports dietitian that was working with me at the time, we were both like, we can't do this clinical sports nutrition job and do all of this food service management. So when we implemented our fueling station several years ago, we partnered with a catering company. And so we work closely with them, but they do most of the ordering and receiving and staffing and all of the daily operations that go into that. And they're fantastic. And so I just kind of have some say in what we're doing, but they're the primary operators of our fueling station. And then I also have a responsibility with our Gatorade. We've got a big Gatorade budget that we've got to stock Gatorade product in our Olympic sport weight room and also get Gatorade products to our teams. And I have the most amazing undergrad and graduate students that work with me. And so there's 11 of them and they help with the Gatorade in the weight room and getting it to teams. And I'm really fortunate for that so that I can spend more time with more clinical sports nutrition. So I kind of do it all.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I like, as you've just echoed throughout most of this conversation so far, that UNC does seem to be unique in their focus and maybe ahead of the curve in having this specific attention towards prevention of disordered eating, Red S, or at least having awareness about it. Would you say that certain teams, maybe those that are more aesthetic based or more focused on weight, do you find that certain teams have a higher prevalence or maybe more habits of disordered eating that you have to spend more time on educating them?
Sure. I mean, every team is going to have its own culture. And I mean, certainly you'll see in the literature, those aesthetic sports definitely have the higher risk and prevalence of disordered eating and eating disorders. But I found that, you know, diet culture can affect anyone in any sport of any body size, of any background. And so I've find that I help people all along the spectrum of dysfunctional eating behaviors. And they may be on an aesthetic sport team or on a team sport. I think it can affect anyone.
Yeah, for sure. How receptive are the athletes to thinking about more intuitive eating? Are they kind of 50-50 or more receptive to that?
Yeah. So, I mean, at UNC, we have almost 800 student athletes. So I obviously don't know about everyone's thoughts related to food and body image. But we certainly have athletes that are really passionate right along with us about health at every size and intuitive eating topics. And it's really fun to work with them with social media posts, some team meetings, some outreach events. And then, you know, there's also athletes that I think are just sort of curious and like engaged in learning. We'll also have athletes that are indifferent to the message. You know, maybe they're protected by their own body privileges or just sort of indifferent or just busy trying to survive college athletics. And I totally get that. And I don't really interact with them too much. And I'm sure there's athletes that are unaware of diet culture. And I'm sure there's folks that are also resistant to the message. So I think we've got folks that fall all along the spectrum, just like any group or community. But I definitely want to say there are definitely athletes here that really enjoy learning about this message. And I'm hopeful this will be like the future of sports nutrition to be more inclusive about bodies and to talk about intuitive eating in addition to sports nutrition principles.
Yeah. And you mentioned that through social media, maybe you're reaching them. So I'm curious, how is this conversation coming up? Because maybe athletes come for their freshman year and they come from high school or maybe like travel teams, competitive backgrounds where maybe they don't even know what diet culture is, right? That they've been exposed to it, but they're not familiar with the term diet culture. So how are you introducing that conversation to say like, hey, this may be what you're accustomed to, but this is actually how we're trying to promote a healthy relationship with food and body, or how we're going to work on performance without an extreme hyper-focus on counting calories or something like that. Like, how is that conversation coming about?
Yeah. So it really varies. It really depends. I've tried a few different approaches, a lot of trial and error. I've also sort of in my experience learned to be patient and try to do more listening than talking. And I certainly want to meet the athletes where they're at. I want to try to establish rapport with them. I want them to know that I'm on their team and that I want to support them in their performance nutrition. So I think connecting with the athletes first as humans, trying to establish a relationship is really important because I don't want anybody to feel shame when they're encounters with a sports dietitian, because I think that can easily happen. A lot of people have those assumptions that working with a sports dietitian, maybe they are going to be the food police or they're going to be monitoring my body size. So I want them to know that I'm different. But I think being really slow and patient is important. And I'm also in a fortunate position where I've got these athletes for 4 years. So I call myself like a professional seed planter. So I might just kind of say a little something, see how they respond. And then just know that I've direct them to our Instagram account, let them know about the fueling station, try something new Tuesday and hope that like the conversation can continue. I recently did a podcast with one of our rowing student athletes that I thought she did a really beautiful job of leading, where we talked about diet culture and how it shows up in sport culture and a little introduction to intuitive eating. So that just came out like a few weeks ago. So that's been nice to kind of recommend to athletes and to staff so that they can just listen to that 30-minute podcast and then maybe come back to me with some questions, comments, concerns. So it's definitely a process.
And a good way to have different learning experiences, I'm sure.
Yeah, everybody's going to learn differently. Everybody comes into college with their own thoughts, beliefs, and attitudes about food and nutrition and bodies. And I want to listen to that first. But I am upfront that I am an anti-diet dietitian. I'm an intuitive eating counselor and want to help you with your nutrition, and with your performance. But I'm not going to do that with a side of diet culture.
Yeah. I love that. Well, speaking of that, you have a wonderful Instagram account for UNC Nutrition, and we love the Waking Up from Diet Culture posts.
Thanks for that.
Yeah. They're so great. And we'll definitely post a link to that in the show notes. How do you think athletes are being exposed to this language of diet culture?
Short answer is me. I'll ask them, if they've heard of diet culture, they might say like, sure, maybe they can, pick up on some context clues. But I haven't really talked to an athlete that's like, oh yeah, I know all about diet culture. Let me give you the definition. Let me give you some examples of how it shows up. I would love to meet those athletes. Would love to talk with them. But those athletes that are featured on an Instagram account over the last few months are amazing individuals that I've had the opportunity to work with for a long period of time. It takes a lot of time and unlearning of diet culture to wake up from it. So the first athlete that was actually featured, he's the one that came up with the title, Waking Up from Diet Culture. And it was his idea to share his story. And I'm just so proud of him for initiating that. That never would have come to be without him. And I hope more athletes will share their story to help destigmatize and just keep this conversation going, that we can fuel for performance as athletes, and we can use intuitive eating principles to help our performance. And we don't have to do that without diet culture messages.
It's such a cool narrative too, coming from the athletes themselves, because I think while social media, obviously there are pros and cons, but I do like that it is becoming more educational, informational, especially when it's coming from credentialed practitioners. But if you're struggling with something, I think there's something to be said about an athlete who's actually gone through the transition talking about their experience versus that information coming from a practitioner saying you should do this. So maybe it's more relatable. Maybe people are in the midst of it and they can totally see the transition from this athlete. But again, it's people learn in different ways. And I think showing that narrative from the actual college athlete when they are in a vulnerable culture to begin with is really, really powerful.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I think, you know, I'm the old professional. So I definitely don't have as much influence, I think, as their peers do. So it means a lot when the athletes can speak up. You know, as you guys know, Eating Disorder Awareness Week is coming up in a couple of weeks at the end of February. And so I'm reaching out to those athletes that are passionate about health at every size, intuitive eating, waking up from diet culture, because I want them to be at our tabling event at the fueling station. We're going to have like an activity board of strategies or ideas of how we can support our friends with eating disorders. And like you said, I want the athletes behind that table. I want the athletes to know that their fellow athletes are also passionate about reducing disordered eating and eating disorders among athletes in sports. So it's something that I'm very proactive in, of trying to get athletes to spread this message and not just me.
And what about coaches? Do you have a relationship with them, and are they being educated on this too?
Yeah, probably not as much as I would like. Our sports psychology staff is amazing here at UNC, and they do a lot of education with our coaches around mental health and body image. So I give them a lot of credit for that. And I certainly interact with coaches on a regular basis as well. I think the younger coaches are more receptive to the message than maybe the older coaches. Like you said, if you've been living in diet culture for a really long time, it takes a lot to unlearn it. So I want to give compassion to everyone. It's really hard, but yeah, I'm really thankful for some of the coaches that are really receptive and on board. And I hope other coaches will get on board as well.
Yeah, I think it definitely needs to be a systemic issue from the top down. And that always helps when your coach is more supportive and not telling you to lose 5 pounds so you can be, you know, 30 seconds faster
right.
in a mile.
Kind of like we talked about with Fiona Sutherland and a few episodes back. This is back in season 1, but we talked about, you know, coming down from the athletic director and the coaches and just having that education so people are on the same page. And it's definitely not going to happen overnight because, like we've talked about, people have been ingrained with this way of thinking for so long, and to no fault their own, that's just the way the culture is. So people think that that's a normal way to approach food and sport. So we have a long way to go, but I think speaking up, being aware, situations like Mary Kane talking about it and just bringing more awareness to the sports culture in general is progress.
Absolutely. Yeah, we do have a long way to go. It is cool when the freshman athletes come in. I try to like set the tone that like this is what sport culture is like at UNC, that we're trying to fuel for performance and be anti-diet. So hoping to get them young and to set a new norm, a new standard. You know, we're all culture makers, so I think we all can play a role in creating a culture that we want to live in. And I want to live in a culture where people feel safe and supported to get their nutritional needs met.
Yeah, what a cool experience. I mean, when I was a freshman in college, we did not have a team dietitian, and there were no messages like that being put forth. So it's so cool to think that you are kind of spearheading and just being a part of these kids' hopeful transformation and saying like, hey, welcome to the team. We look forward to keeping you fueled, but we're going to take a different approach here.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I didn't have a dietitian when I was an athlete either. So I'm always thinking about like, what did I need when I was an athlete? What did my friends need when we were in college? So I think about that often.
Yeah. What sport did you play?
I played basketball. Yeah.
Oh, fun. That's exciting.
I played all sorts of sports growing up, but basketball is the one I played in college, and then played a lot of pickup basketball and in grad school. And now I'm mostly retired.
Aw, where'd you go to college? I don't know if we covered that in the beginning.
Yeah, at the University of Portland in Oregon. It's a WCC school with Gonzaga, Pepperdine. Yeah.
Okay. So you probably played with some big like basketball player names. Anyone that went to the WNBA?
My claim to fame with University of Portland sports is I was there when Megan Rapinoe was there.
Oh, that's cool. That is really cool.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. So University of Portland doesn't have a football team, but our women's soccer team was amazing. Won a national championship while I was there. So our weekends, we'd go to the soccer games and not football games.
Oh, that's fun. I went to college in Seattle, so not too far from Portland. Yeah.
I love Seattle. My college boyfriend at the time lived in Seattle, so I got to go there often and visit him and explore the city. And I love Seattle.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. Way too expensive to live now, but we love to visit for sure. So, Rachel, so you've given us a little bit of your background of getting into intuitive eating. Do you feel like you've had a complete personal transformation from diet culture thinking to food freedom and intuitive eating? Like, how do you think that unfolded?
Yeah, so I certainly acknowledge the body privileges and supportive family that I had throughout my childhood that made eating intuitively relatively easy for me. And I was able to eat intuitively throughout college. And then after college was when I kind of had those thoughts of like, I want to make sure that I'm still doing this eating thing, quote, right. I kind of identify as being a recovering perfectionist. So I think there was some of that, certainly trying to protect my thin privilege, trying to do the nutrition thing right. That sort of led me into my master's degree program of nutrition exercise science. But throughout like that curriculum, sort of post my bachelor's degree, sort of learning about quote weight management or that weight centric nutrition information, I actually kind of thought that that wasn't really relevant to me because I wanted to work with college athletes. I wanted to focus on fueling for performance, not necessarily like helping athletes lose or gain weight. And I think my privilege is showing again, and that was my college athlete experience. I never got messages that I should gain or lose weight, and I was trying to fuel for performance. So I kind of ignored some of that diet culture, weight management stuff throughout education. And then at Oregon, like I mentioned, I was a lot of food service focused. I didn't do a lot of nutrition education. I would hear things from athletes, like they felt guilty eating certain foods or, kind of binge eating at night. And I definitely felt ill-equipped to support those athletes early in my career. So, I'm really fortunate to find this framework of intuitive eating and health at every size to better guide me as a clinician so that I could sit with those athletes in those tough conversations and be a better counselor for them. I do think like as far as my relationship with food has evolved, I think I've been better able to enjoy my food and movement more, you know, and having less judgment on myself, learning about Haze and intuitive eating. I've learned a lot more about self-compassion around privilege. And I think I have more gratitude and awareness of food and bodies. And I think that's been really helpful for me. And I think really, really freeing to learn more about self-compassion and privilege.
Yes, all very important things. And I think all of us have our own history entanglement with food and body in some way, shape, or form. So we're all going to come at this education piece a little bit differently, which I think is special. And the more different angles that athletes can hear about intuitive eating or body liberation or health at every size or food freedom, whatever it is, I think, you know, maybe one way will resonate more than others, but the more different angles we can approach them with, it seems like that's going to help.
Yeah.
What do you think specifically are some of like the biggest challenges or diet culture challenges that some of the athletes come in experiencing?
Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind when I think about how diet culture shows up in sports is the hyper focus on body size. Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, you're right on target for what I was asking, but what are some of the big diet culture challenges or maybe things, phrases, words that athletes are using when they come to you?
Sure. So, okay. So some of the phrases that come up with this hyper-focus on body size and all this weight stigma. So things like, you're so skinny. I wish I looked like you. Are you sure you want to eat that? That one's really common. Or, wow, that's a lot of food to eat. Or, you know, if you just lost a few pounds, you'd be faster, stronger, or whatever. And there's so many. We did a post on our Instagram a few months back for Weight Stigma Awareness Week, of like a thread of all these examples of things that are said in sport that are just like normalized, but we're trying to call out is like, no, these are unhelpful and these are stigmatizing. And it was by far the most popular post. I mentioned it in one of my presentations. We had like over 11,000 impressions on that post, way more than any of the other ones. I think a lot of athletes can recognize at least one, if not dozens and dozens of examples of weight stigma that they've experienced in sport. One athlete that I've worked with for a number of years actually submitted a proposal to do a TED Talk on weight stigma in sport, and I'm super proud of her. Unfortunately, it was postponed due to the pandemic, but I'm hopeful she'll get a stage to do that soon. Because I think it's something that we need to talk about, that weight stigma, that hyper-focus on body size and those assumptions that we have about athletes around their bodies we need to talk about.
Go ahead.
I was just thinking of some other ways of diet culture showing up.
No, I was just going to ask if that's what you see the majority of the time when you're counseling athletes.
So I like to ask athletes about their relationship with food. What are their major influences around food and nutrition? And, you know, you get like the coach, the family member, the friend, the teammate, and some of the things that they've said about food and bodies. And it comes up a lot. So I want to hear those stories. And I feel like I do a lot of apologizing. Oh, I'm just so sorry that your youth coach told you that you needed to be X amount of pounds in order to be a good soccer player. Like, gosh, that was really unhelpful to hear. And they'll be like, yeah, it was. It was really unhelpful. I didn't like that a lot. And so then I'll label that as like an example of weight stigma and something that we don't need to bring into our future fueling plan. I want to give athletes the space to talk about that for sure.
Do you see a lot of questioning carbohydrate needs or fearing certain macronutrient groups aside from protein? Protein always seems to be idolized, but.
Oh yeah. Protein can do no wrong. It is God's gift to us. We certainly see, just like you guys, that the fear of weight gain, the fear of carbs, the fear of sugar. And I want to come to that with just curiosity, no judgment. I want to know where they got that information from. What do they think about that? How does that belief serve you? And just see where the conversation goes that way.
So just helping them unpack probably years and years of weight stigma and being told to look a certain way in order to perform better.
Exactly. I love that word, unpacking.
Yes,
that's what, and it takes a lot of time. That's why I'm so grateful for the interns that I work with to help do all these other responsibilities that the sports nutrition department is responsible for, so that I can sit with an athlete and do a lot of unpacking and unlearning and relearning, definitely.
Yeah, and hopefully this question makes sense, but I'm thinking about those athletes in season versus athletes out of season. So are you still able to kind of devote some of this time to athletes out of season? Because that may be when they're not training as much. So maybe they're having more diet culture thoughts, or they're more likely to be influenced by diet culture thinking. I mean, how does that factor in? Can they just set up an appointment with you if they need some support, or are they having like team meetings on the side?
So athletes definitely self-refer if they've got questions about weight or off-season nutrition. I also want to give a huge shout out to our athletic trainers. Our athletic trainers are seeing the athletes on a much regular basis than I am. And I do like formal education presentations for them, the staff athletic trainers, the graduate student athletic trainers, so that they're aware of diet culture and some of those disordered eating thoughts and behaviors, so that they can refer, you know, if they hear an athlete talk about wanting to cut calories in the off season, just sort of off the cuff, they can sort of interject and be like, you know, maybe you should talk to Rachel about that. And I think we've done a pretty good job sort of culturally to destigmatize seeking nutrition support, hopefully. And so I think the athletic trainers and our physicians and sports psychologists all will like refer an athlete to sports nutrition if they see some food issues coming up. But I'll meet with athletes off season, pre post season. It's really important to me that I meet an athlete when they get here, so they have like that initial screen and consult, so they know me, so that if it's a year or two later that they want to come back and talk, that's great. They'll at least have that one encounter with me when they first got.
Yeah.
And I think it's wonderful that you are so available to these athletes, but I'm thinking, I mean, there's 800 plus athletes, like that's a lot on your shoulders. So you have other staff members, you have assistant sports dietitians who are also kind of trained in this way of thinking and are doing the same thing you're doing?
Thank you for the validation. Yes, it is a lot of work. And at UNC, we just have 2 full-time sports dietitians, and then we have 2 fellows. And that's it as far as like the full-time staff. And then we have, 20-ish interns that help with the daily operations. So we definitely need more staff. So if my boss is listening to this, we would be really grateful to have more sports dietitians that are familiar with intuitive eating to support our athletes, to fuel for performance and unpack and unlearn diet culture and relearn how to more properly fuel for sport.
Right. And back to our earlier point, I mean, I think some of the awareness that we're trying to spread, it has to come from the top down, people just educating the upper levels, the behind the scenes, or maybe I'm not sure the word I'm trying to use, like the ADs and the oversee people with power, for lack of a better term, just to kind of understand what's happening with the subsidiaries down on the ground level.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Our sports psychologists, athletic trainers, all are great advocates for nutrition and our anti-diet approach. So that's really helpful. I actually gave a presentation last week to our Rams Club. So you might, I don't know if you're familiar, but it's the donors that specifically donate to athletics at Carolina. Uh-huh. And I did a presentation for them about our nutrition services and why it's so important that we take an anti-diet approach with our athletes. And it was really encouraging to get like that positive feedback from them. So I'm hopeful that maybe there can be some more money spent on some staffing and some education programming for anti-diet nutrition information. I have big dreams.
Well, you're in a good position to do so. I mean, it seems like you've already made so much change. And that actually just led me to think of another question. So I think Rachel knows I did my master's degree through UNC's program. You mentioning that you need more staff, I'm wondering, can you get students to help you? I mean, is there a way to present to the students in the MPHRD program or anyone to see if there's interest or start educating, plant that seed, for lack of a better term?
Yes, you're absolutely right. So I do guest lecture in the MPH program, and that's how I get some students from there. So 6 of my interns are MPHRD grad students.
Oh, that's awesome. I would have loved to have you lecture when I was there.
Oh, thanks. That means a lot. I'm really fortunate to be able to have a couple contacts in the MPH program that allow me to come chat with the students. And I love it when they reach out after the presentations. They're like, hey, can we talk? Can I volunteer? And I'm like, yes, absolutely. So they help a lot, like I said, with the fueling station and with Gatorade, but they're also, we meet every week to talk about our social media content. We all kind of take turns doing posts and captions and work on all these things together. They help with the newsletters. So, in this time of COVID, it seems like everybody wants a newsletter. And those things, you know, take time to put together. And so, yeah, our MPH grad students are really helpful in those types of tasks. So,
yeah, just to help you delegate and have a bunch of different hands to spread the message even further.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, love that.
So we want to pivot to some fueling and sports nutrition topics before we start to wrap up. So as a sports dietitian, Rachel, can you just give us your spiel, maybe what you tell your athletes on how food impacts performance?
Sure. So food certainly impacts performance. You know, if we don't get enough to eat in regular intervals at optimal times, you know, if we don't have the appropriate amounts of carbs and proteins and fats and those micronutrients like iron and calcium and vitamin D, then, you know, we're at risk of injury, stress fractures, hormone imbalance, muscle cramping, slower recovery. So definitely want athletes to be aware of the consequences of not getting enough to eat consistently throughout the day and having those varied foods. But I also like to talk to athletes about zooming out and looking at the big picture too. You know, there's so many factors that impact our performance and food is just one of many. So I also like to talk to athletes about other aspects of their life that may influence their food, like their mental, emotional, social health, their academic goals, their career goals, their relationships, family, friends, other things that are going on. You know, food is just one part of the performance puzzle. But we talk about those sports nutrition priorities of adequacy first, then timing and variety and balance.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. I love that you're bringing in some of the other parts too, like sleep and stress and relationships and how all of that, because obviously people generally equate food to health when there's so much more genetic makeup, everything else involved. So I think it's great that you're also educating on that.
Yeah. Got to talk about those social determinants of health. We can't just think it's just our food and exercise that impact our performance. Absolutely.
Right. Right. It's really the whole athlete. For sure.
Yep, absolutely. And food is more than fuel. That's another sort of spiel that we talk about a lot. It's sure it's fuel and nourishment and to help promote muscle recovery and improve our hydration, but it's also pleasure and satisfaction. It's also a way to celebrate culture and tradition. You know, just food plays a lot of roles in our lives. And sometimes in sports, food gets just minimized to fuel. And I try to challenge that narrative too, that like food is, it plays a lot of roles in our lives.
Yeah, I would say as athletes, it just becomes like mechanical or monotonous. Like I have to eat now and I have to eat now. And this is how many grams of carbs and protein I need. And you're right. It's just, it's so structured and regimented that we forget that we should enjoy our food. It's supposed to be pleasurable. It's supposed to taste good along the way too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Can you tell us what you're doing in the athletic department to help athletes understand the importance of fueling for performance?
Yeah, so we're trying to do a lot, as much as we can during a pandemic. We're certainly open for ideas for improvement. But we do presentations for teams, for athletic trainers, for small groups, a lot of individual meetings, like I mentioned. That podcast I mentioned with that rowing athlete's been really helpful to get a message out on our social media, on our newsletters. But there's also like TV monitors in our athletic training room and our weight room that we try to put some information up so that athletes understand the importance of fueling for performance. So we're trying to be seen, but athletes are really busy. This is a tough time to be a college student, tough time to be a college athlete in 2021. But we, at the end of the day, we want athletes to know that sports nutrition set. We care about them first as humans. We want them to know that them getting enough to eat equally distributed throughout the day is what's most important for us. And so we want athletes to know that we care and we want to do our best to improve our fueling station service and provide nutrition information that's non-stigmatizing, but actually helpful and supportive. So that's kind of what we're trying to do in a nutshell.
Yeah, and we didn't even talk about or ask about what the season was like under COVID. Did you have any athletes or teams that had to forego a season, or I'm sure everything looked different either way?
Yes, very different. So a lot more Zoom meetings, transitioning nutrition counseling to Zoom, which there's been some pros and cons to that. I think nutrition counseling is more accessible for some folks, is more convenient to be on Zoom sometimes, but there's also athletes that really wanted to meet in person, and that was tough to not be able to do that for a while. And one of the biggest adjustments during this pandemic time was relocating our fueling station. It used to be indoors in our academic building, and now it's in a concession stand outside in our football stadium. So that was certainly an adjustment. But really overall, our teams are really resilient, and we've had to shut down a couple of teams for a period of time, but everybody's going and doing the best they can with this regular testing and the social distancing. And I'm really proud of what everybody's doing to make sports happen right now.
Yeah. And when I think about it from an athlete perspective, there's a lot happening, and we're asking so much of them to just transition and adjust. And I'm sure it can be overwhelming. So having you with your compassionate tone along the way seems like it would be really helpful.
Sure. I hope so. I sure hope so. They do a lot.
Yeah, you do a lot. Yeah, this is great. This has been so enlightening to hear a little bit about how you have been navigating being a sports dietitian in the anti-diet world. And we really appreciate all the work that you do.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you guys as well. It's so, so helpful when there's other sports dietitians that are truly working from an anti-diet lens as well. So I love posting your guys' podcast and some of your content. So thank you. Keep up the good work. It's so helpful. It's not just me sharing these radical ideas.
Oh, well, the feeling is definitely mutual. To wrap up, we just have a quick rapid fire, and you just want to say the first thing that pops into your head. How does that sound?
Okay, sure. I'm ready.
Okay, cool. So first one, what is your favorite pre-exercise snack or meal?
Banana and peanut butter. Easy.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yep. What's your favorite piece of workout attire? If you have a brand, you can say that too.
Well, I have to say Nike, obviously, Sarah. I'm very, very thankful that working at UNC, I have some really fantastic apparel to wear for workouts. So it's hard to pick a favorite with all the UNC gear that I have.
Yeah, that was kind of a skewed question. That
one. What's the best piece of sports advice you've ever received?
Do the best you can. That's always good enough.
What about the coolest memory of your job to this point?
Oh, there's so many. All the light bulbs. I had a meeting yesterday where an athlete, she's like, you know, I think I've been eating less like on the days that I have off, but I think that might be a diet culture thought. What do you think? And I'm like, oh my gosh. Yes, you're absolutely right. That is a diet culture thought. So that one was just yesterday. But I know there are so, so many memories of the amazing athletes that are unlearning diet culture. And I'm fortunate to witness a lot of those moments.
That is such a cool moment.
You could probably write a really cool book about that. Just add it to your list.
I would love to read a book about that.
All right, last one. What's your favorite show to watch during COVID quarantine?
You know, I don't really watch a lot of TV. I watched The Queen's Gambit recently. That was That was entertaining. Not my usual show to watch, but that was our New Year's weekend.
Yeah, that was a good one. We watched that too. Rachel, tell us how people can connect and see all the awesome work that you do.
Yeah, so I would love to connect with some like-minded folks. They are welcome to check out our Instagram account at UNC Sports Nutrition. They could check out our Go Heels page where we talk about sports nutrition. But if they'd like to connect, I would say just send me a DM on the Instagram page.
And we will put links to all of that and links to what Rachel talked about. And Rachel, thank you so much for your time. We know how busy you are. We really appreciate you sharing your knowledge, your wisdom, and just giving us insight into how there is hope, especially in the athletic sports, college, collegiate realm, about recovering from diet culture.
Yeah, I sure hope so. Yeah, thank you so much for giving me the platform to talk about anti-diet sports nutrition information. I hope we can have more conversations about this in the future.
Thanks, Rachel.
Thanks, ladies. Have a good day.
That wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review so others can find it more easily. You can also stay in touch with us by joining our Facebook group, Nutrition for Runners. If you have any requests for future episode topics and more, email us at nailyournutritioncourse1@gmail.com. Happy fueling!